Welcome to Soil Stories with Nick and Leanna.
Episode 9, Saving the Soil with No-Till and Conservation Tillage. Hi everyone and welcome. Today we are talking about physical management of soils, and more specifically, no-till. No-till has been a hot topic for years, if not decades, in the agricultural industry. It is praised for its environmental benefits in reducing soil loss and building soil health. However, it is not a widely adopted practice among farmers. Less than 20% of corn and soybean farmers are using continuous no-till in the U.S. Conservation tillage and no-till have a lot of amazing benefits and protect one of our world's most valuable resources, the soil. This is especially important for Minnesota and other states in the Midwest, where we have some of the best soil for crop production in the world. Yet oftentimes, our soils are forgotten about and not thought of as this valuable resource. So, in more times than not, our soil is treated like dirt.
We have some of the best soil in the whole world. And we kind of take it for granted because since it's so good, it bounces back fairly easily right now. And we lose it by wind. It goes out to the Atlantic Ocean. And by water, it goes down to the Gulf of Mexico. And we don't want to lose it. We are feeding the world. So it's even more important that we keep what we have, that we keep the good high organic matter soils that we have and start treating them not like dirt.
That's Jody DeYoung-Hughes. Jody is a regional educator with the University of Minnesota Extension and is our resident expert in implementing conservation tillage practices here in Minnesota.
The area that I work in the most is helping them reduce tillage. And to me, that's one of the best things they could do, especially in Minnesota, where we tend to do more tillage than our surrounding states.
Like Jody said, Minnesota tends to do a lot more tillage than the surrounding states. But we use a whole breadth of different types of tillage, from conventional to conservation to no-till. And these different types of tillage mean different tillage implements, or parts that we hook onto the back of the tractor, with different knives or discs, all going at different depths. But most of this has to do with the amount of residue that's left on the surface of the soil.
Conventional tillage is usually using a chisel plow or a disc ripper, some aggressive fall tillage aspect, and then coming back in the spring and getting it ready for planting. So either with a vertical till or with a field cultivator or even a shallow disc. And it usually leaves less than 30% residue after planting. So the way that the NRCS figures out, you know, how those categories work is they check the residue levels right after planting. So when all the field work is done. So under 30% is conventional tillage. And above 30% is conservation tillage, but I would actually like to bump that up closer to 40-45%. And then no-till leaves all the residue on the surface and you plant right into it. So it's important to have residue managers to push that residue out of the way and a really good planter to get the seed into the soil exactly where you want it. But with no-till, there's no other tillage. There's no prepping the ground for planting.
The planter and the type of equipment you are going to use is very important if you're going to implement no-till. No-till means that there is nothing to prepare the soil for planting ahead of time. Residue is a huge part of conservation tillage and no-till, and it has all kinds of benefits like smothering weed seeds and retaining moisture. But when you're planting, it can be a hindrance to have all that residue. So you need to have a piece of equipment that's able to cut through that residue and prep that soil while you're planting.
When we were early no-tillers, we had a lot more challenges because the planters were not built heavy enough, and we had trouble with penetration, getting the seed into the ground. So we had to build planters that had coulters on them to help cut through the soil, and we had to weight down the frames. Some people would actually put suitcase weights, which are front weights for tractors, onto the planters. They do all kinds of things to penetrate the residue and get into the soil. We have countless amounts of residue, and a lot of people call that trash. I do once in a while, but it really isn't. It's residue is your friend. You just have to know how to manage it.
And this, my friends, is my dear old dad, Jim Leverage. I grew up on a no-till farm, which many of you know, but you probably don't know all the details and challenges that it took to get started. So my dad is going to share a little bit of his story.
I'm a retired faculty emeritus of Wisconsin. I started back as a county extension agent back in the early 80s and evolved into a on-farm research coordinator at the university. And while I was doing that, I was also farming the home farm, and I've been no-tilling since 1984, and I've been lucky to work with lots of successful farmers to learn from them.
No-tilling has a lot to do with soil conservation, but sometimes we don't talk a lot about water conservation. Drought is a real issue for many growers, especially if you have sandier soils.
I initially got into the no-tilling back in the 80s because of the soil and water conservation issues related to it. A lot of people are familiar with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, but they're not familiar with the old Natural Resource Conservation Service, which was the Soil and Water Conservation Service. And the Soil and Water Conservation Service focused on the fact that not only did we want to save soil, but we also want to save water. So as we were saving water on our light textured soils, our sandier soils, the no-till really began to shine because it saved the moisture that we needed to grow the crop through the drought periods.
In contrast to droughty situations, much of Minnesota and the farmers there are dealing with too much water. And this can lead farmers to choose tillage to dry out the soil rather than implement no-till.
Minnesota is a pretty tall state. So we have, if you go to the northwest corner, they're drier and colder. And if you go to the southeast corner, they're wetter and warmer. So there's going to be a whole gambit of different tillages along the way. West central Minnesota really likes disc gripping with the field cultivation in the spring, disc gripping in the fall. And there are areas that before certain crops, they will do moldboard plow. As you go further north, it depends on the crop. And then in the southeast, they have a karst topography, which means they have limestone that is pretty close to the surface. And so if you lose too much soil from erosion, from tillage, you have no farming aspect. So they're really careful or much more careful about what they use in that area of the state. So chisel plow is usually our what we would call conventional, but a lot of farmers have gone deeper than chisel plow and have been using the disc ripper.
Tillage is very prevalent in Minnesota. Like Jody said, many of the neighboring states are doing less tillage. A prime example of this is Leverage Farms next door in Wisconsin. We have been using no-till for almost 40 years, and we are only 30 miles from the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. We use no-till to help prevent soil loss and water loss, especially because we're in the driftless region, meaning the glaciers didn't pass over our landscape. And because of this, our land is really hilly, and this means there's a lot of opportunity for soil to move due to wind and water. Now, even though much of Minnesota's agricultural land might appear to be flat, there is still a lot of opportunity for soil loss and erosion, especially when we add tillage to the equation.
Tillage erosion is actually much more erosive than wind and water combined. Tillage erosion breaks apart that structure, so those larger aggregates, which are harder for water and wind to pick up, are now physically broken apart by tillage into smaller pieces, and those pieces can be picked up easy by wind and water. So clay, an individual particle of clay is microscopic and is so easy to move with wind or water. And so erosion is my biggest concern. And even if you're on flat soil, people go, well, I don't have erosion. You have wind erosion. If you have on slopes, then you have more of a water erosion issue. But tillage enhances both of them. If your soil is covered, it helps break up the wind, slow down the water, and keep your soil from eroding away.
Given the issues with soil erosion that comes with tillage, we have to ask, where on earth did this practice come from? There are some benefits to tillage, but its history actually has quite a curious beginning.
It's kind of interesting. Tillage was started a long, long time ago, but there was one person in the 1600s that really made it popular, and that was Jethro Tull. And you're probably too young to remember that there's a band named after them, but he's a scientist, and he was very well known and respected. And he said that the way that plants grew and took up the things they needed was that they physically took in soil through their roots. And so you had to really till the soil and get it to its, you know, individual particles so that the root could suck it up. And we know now that's not what happens. But he said that you should plow the soil like, was it 3 or 4 times to get the soil ready and then cultivate. And oh, and he was the inventor of the field cultivator. And every week until the canopy closed. So that was, started it. And then when we used to have perennials and we didn't have as good of chemicals to use herbicides, it was used to also turn soil over, to warm it up, to bury weed seed, and incorporate your manure. So it has a purpose. We've been finding ways to do it differently. And it's been an exciting path the last 20 years.
We know there are some benefits to tilling, and one of them that Jody mentioned is warming up the soil. This means that the seed bed is warm enough to encourage seeds to germinate. But no-till also has some nifty tricks. In no-till, the soil structure is improved, and this can help to warm up the soil faster and also improve soil water dynamics.
Well, in Minnesota and the surrounding states, we're blessed with really dark soil. It's dark in color, and residue is very light in color. So the sun bounces off the lighter colors and is absorbed by darker colors. So our soil, if you take the residue off, warms up faster than if you keep the residue on there. But while that part is true, the other thing we were finding is if you have residue and if you have standing stalks, they act like straws in the field. So when it rains, it wicks that water down into the soil quickly. And if you do a lot of tillage, it has more of a tendency to crust and seal and bond and not get absorbed. So it's a balancing act. It always has been for farmers. It's not, oh, this is the best way and this is the worst way. It's so many different aspects in between that they're trying to balance. So you can warm up your soil that way, but what you end up doing, the more tillage you do and the more you incorporate that residue, you destroy more and more structure. And structure, to me, the number one thing that happens with structure is it gets that water into the soil quickly. As you build the structure into that soil, you get larger air pockets on the top, which help the air flow, and air warms up a lot faster than water does. If you have a compacted soil with low structure, and which will compact more easily, it holds more water, you end up with more root diseases. So as you go to a no-till system, start building that structure, more air is able to exchange into the soil and deeper into the soil. And like I said, more water can wick into it. And that structure also helps hold up the weight of equipment and helps naturally to not have as much compaction potential out there.
In both excessively wet and dry conditions, no-till has got these other systems beat when it comes to water dynamics.
Because the soils on this home farm were much lighter, they were more at risk to losing moisture and to be lost. And so that was part of the impetus. So like I said, soil and water conservation, the two together are what are important, because we're saving the water in the fact that it doesn't run off and we infiltrate it. And no-till has a much higher level of infiltration than other tillage systems because the soil structure improves.
Not only are we improving soil structure to help with water dynamics, but we are also saving soil. And on top of that, there are productivity gains that we can consider when we implement conservation tillage.
On our light soils, our 2% organic matter soils, it's almost equivalent to our 4% organic matter soils. because we're retaining the water and we're building some tilth in those soils.
This increased production not only helps the farmer's bottom line, but it's also good for us in an environmental way. Like Jim said, we are getting equivalent yields on our more marginal soils to our clay soils. This is a good use of the word sustainable in terms of agriculture. We are using less resources and end up with a crop that is equal to those on soils that are tilled. However, we don't need as many inputs. We spend less on fuel, time, machinery, and even herbicides. You see, the residue in no-till acts like a blanket covering up weeds and suppressing them. So this reduces our herbicide inputs as well. And most importantly, we are building soil tilth, as Jim said. Tilth is kind of an old-school word for soil health. It means that we're helping the soil to become stronger, building up its structure and biology so that it can be more self-sustaining. No-till in building soil tilth is truly what we would consider sustainable for the soil. This also has implications for carbon storage in soils. Higher yields means higher biomass, which means higher organic matter accumulation over time. And this higher organic matter translates into higher amounts of soil organic carbon. This is especially true in no-till systems where we have a lot of residue. In terms of our farm in Wisconsin, we've seen gains of about 0.5% in our lighter soils. And that half percentage goes a long way when it comes to carbon storage.
In Minnesota and Western Minnesota and the tall grass prairie area, before we broke it into farmland, it was, you know, around 10% organic matter. And as we tilled the soil and turned it over, and most of it was with moldboard plow back then, we lost a lot of that carbon back up to the atmosphere. And our organic matter levels went down because organic matter is almost 50% carbon. If you're losing the carbon, then you're losing your organic matter. So if we can build up our organic matter levels again, we'll never get back to, you know, virgin prairie numbers, but build it up 1% or 2%, that can hold a lot of carbon from the atmosphere. We are part of the solution on helping with climate change.
There's a lot of research out there indicating no-till and conservation tillage can help build soil organic matter, and in turn result in carbon sequestration in the soil. However, not every study agrees with this. And when I brought this up to Jody, she had some good explanations as to why the research doesn't always reflect greater carbon storage in no-till systems.
I think where that came from was they were only looking at the top 6 inches in a lot of the research. They weren't looking at from 6 to 12 inches. And the other thing that also, there is storage down below even further than what traditional tillage would do. But the other thing that happened is if you don't do your no-till correctly and you see a yield decrease, you know, there's less carbon into the system. Biomass has carbon. So if you have this huge yield of corn, 200 bushel versus 100 bushel, you're going to have twice the biomass and the carbon to go into the soil. So if you don't do your no-till properly, and especially, you know, a lot of this research can go, usually only goes out 3, maybe 5 years. And no-till is not up and really going until, you know, 4 to 7. So you may be missing what it can do, underestimating what it can do. So if your yields are a little bit lower, yeah, you have less carbon. But that is a problem with the research setup, not with the tillage system.
Here, Jody gets at some of the underlying challenges of agricultural research. It's difficult to conduct research on the effects of no-till when you only have a couple years. It can take a couple years of experimenting just to figure out how to implement no-till successfully. And once that system is successfully implemented, it might take an additional 3 years or so to really see the benefits. That's why it's really important for farmers to do their own experimenting on their own land for several years. They know their soil better than anyone else, and they probably have the best intuition on what might work for them and their soil. However, not every farmer is willing to try something consecutively year after year, and some farmers may have already tried no-till and didn't have luck with it, seeing that it might take a couple years to really see the benefits.
And I think a lot of it is tradition. You know, they had their dads and their grandpas telling them that they've experimented, and these were, you know, this is the way that, this is the tillage system that works best for them. I hear a lot, well, I tried no-till in the 70s or 80s and it didn't work. And it maybe it didn't then, but nowadays we have much better planters. We have much better hybrids. We know more about fertility and weed management. And, you know, I would encourage them to try no-till or reducing their tillage again.
In addition to the tradition of tillage, it can seem a little risky to growers. No-till or conservation tillage requires a shift in many management practices, and that can be very intimidating when your livelihood depends on your crop production.
Conservation tillage or no-till takes a little bit more management. And also, it's really hard. I mean, I remember in the early years, you were always wondering if you were missing some yield because you hadn't tilled. But in the recent years here, we've been averaging well over 200 bushel yields on our farm. And I just don't think that, I think that in many years we get more yield because when we go through a dry period, even on our heavy soils, when we need moisture, we don't have the crop stress we would have if we had tilled.
It can be kind of nerve-wracking to shift to no-till, but with the right management, it can have significant benefits. I asked Jody, what usually happens when you ask a grower about switching?
And I'll talk to farmers and I say, you know, why don't you try no-till? The Dakotas do. And they say, well, they're a lot drier. And I say, well, Iowa does. And they said, well, they have a much longer growing season. And I said, well, Wisconsin does. And they said, well, you know, they have different terrain and everything. And I said, okay, Canada does, or Manitoba. And he said, well, they're Canucks. And I'm like, you know, I tell them we do feed the world, but how we do that is an individual journey. And to help them back off on their tillage is the first step.
There are a lot of amazing benefits in using conservation tillage or no-till, but the biggest reason farmers choose not to use no-till or conservation tillage is simply because they believe their soils are too wet or cold. But tillage is not really helping that problem. Tillage is more of a band-aid on that issue. Yes, it might warm up and dry out your soil in the short term, but it's not helping the soil in the long term. This all revolves around soil-water dynamics. You see, air warms much faster than water, so any excess water on the fields keeps the temperatures even colder, which is what growers are trying to avoid. This highlights how important it is to manage soil water, and soil water is ruled by soil physical properties. Here we enter no-till and conservation tillage. With no-till, there are two things that really help with water dynamics. One is the improved structure, and the other is the leftover crop residue.
Okay, so you'll have the standing residue, and two, you'll have better structure. So if you think of, if you had two jars, and one was full of like 1-inch rocks, and the other one was filled with just clay. So one is considered aggregated, and one is not. Well structured, not. Now think about it, if it rained into that jar, how fast would that water get down into the soil? Aggregation will help it get into the soil very quickly, where the other one, it will pond. So you actually can have more problems with tillage and being a wet soil. So no-till can actually do really well. The other thing that we've been finding out is going straight to no-till by itself, like I said, it could take 4 to 7 years before you start seeing a real benefit, which is a long time. What's coming to light more and more now is not, two soils aren't the same. So if somebody has done very aggressive, very deep tillage, and he wants to go to something less aggressive or use cover crops or try to improve the health of his soil, it's going to take longer and they may get frustrated in that process. Where somebody who may have done lighter tillage and is now going to add cover crops and their soil's in better shape, they'll see a return much quicker. So I don't think it's some soils can't be done. It's just going to take longer.
No-till and conservation tillage can be implemented on any soil, but it can take years for a soil to really recuperate and show the benefits of implementing these conservation practices. This is the toughest part about it. You need to have patience. But there are also some management decisions that need to be changed and management practices that are necessary for farmers to adapt to be successful when they do switch to conservation tillage or especially no-till. This can include things like the type of equipment they use and also adjusting their fertility program.
You have to have a good planter and you have to have a combine that spreads out that chaff out behind in a very even pattern. If it's windrowing that residue, it's very hard for the planter to get through it. And, you know, it could cause a lot of problems. You need a good planter that has trash whippers on it, also has a pop-up or starter fertilizer with it. And then you're and I'm not saying you have to have the newest equipment because there are farmers out there with older planters, but they take care of them and maintain them and really keep them sharp and clean and working right, and they will do just as well of a job.
Equipment is very important when we're talking about tillage and planting, and especially in a no-till system, we need to think about the planter. Planting is the very start of crop production, and this is when we need to ensure that there is adequate seed-to-soil contact so that the plant can properly grow. So being mindful about planting and also the planter is critical in no-till because we are dealing with a lot of residue.
Used to be you had to get out and make sure that darn corn planter was getting in the ground. You'd have to put more down pressure on it, adjust it in deeper, and you had to drive slow because the weight, you know, it's just like riding a ski when you're water skiing. The faster you go, the easier it is to stay up on the surface. Well, the same thing happens with a corn planter. If you go too darn fast, you can't get the units in the ground. So we used to plant 4 mile an hour back then. Now we can plant 6 or 7 mile an hour if we need to. But if you go too fast, then your meters don't work accurately if things are bouncing. So that's why today now there's new technologies that have hydraulic control assist on pressuring the row unit into the ground to hold it at a constant depth. I don't see much benefit to it, but that's because my soils are pretty mellow now that I've no-tilled for so many years. My soils are easy to go into.
Joni also mentioned that you have to think about your fertility program. Things are going to have to change a little bit when you switch to no-till.
I think you have to change your fertility program a bit because the residue will tie up some nitrogen. So you have to apply a little bit more nitrogen and you have to apply it in a way that it doesn't tie up on the residue. And you need to apply a starter fertilizer because the soil may be a bit cooler. And the soil takes a little longer to get running in the spring. The microbes and the bacterial action are slowed down because of the temperature, which is not a bad thing. It's just different because it extends you out into the season a little better. But the point being is that some of your nutrients are not quite as available early when you plant. So you need to provide a starter.
Another aspect of management that we use on Leverage Farms is RTK guidance. RTK is real-time kinematics, and what this means is that we are using GPSs to guide our management on our farm. This is pretty high-tech and definitely what you would consider precision agriculture, but using guidance allows us to have accuracy within inches, so we can determine where the tractor and the implement is down to the very inch in the field. This is not necessary in all farm practices, but it does make your management easier and a lot more precise. And in no-till, when we are managing residue, it is a huge advantage.
Basically, satellite guidance on a tractor allows you to be more efficient even if you're in a tillage system because you're not overlapping or underlapping with your tools. So most of the time, it's 3 to 4 satellites that the receiver on your tractor reads, and then it can drive with a WAS signal, and then it will work within 4 to 6 inches of accuracy. Then you can go to RTK, which is using a cellular signal or some other signal from another tower that corrects the differential between those satellites, and it brings you down to within an inch of accuracy. And we use the guidance for the residue management because we know where the previous year's corn rows were. So then when we plant soybeans or corn, if we're planting corn on corn, we just move the nudge it over 20 inches or 10 inches, I should say, from the previous year and plant right down the middle. And that helps us big time because now we're not fighting all that residue because those root balls or crowns, corn roots are very tough nowadays. They don't like to come out of the soil. And even if you do pull them out of the soil, then you have a big void of soil missing so that when you try and plant in that void, you don't get a very good seed bed. So it's just best to avoid it. It's to plant down the middle.
So using the right tools, such as the right equipment, such as your planter and combine, changing up your fertility program, and using precision ag technologies can really help you be successful with no-till. But it turns out in no-till, there are still a lot of mistakes that can be made.
Probably their most common mistakes would be that they're not getting off the planter enough to understand the depth control and getting the planter in the ground. They might be planting at too high a speed because then the planter, if they have an older style planter, it's not staying in the ground where it needs to. They're not applying the proper starter fertilizer program that's needed in no-till. They're not applying enough nitrogen if they're applying it on the surface and it's being tied up in the residue. Whereas if they put it in, inject it in the ground, or if they keep it off the residue when it's applied, they won't have that much trouble. They may be using a fertilizer openers that are plugging up and dragging residue and then creating a bad seed bed because the planter is not functioning and they're ticked off and the planter's not working right. And they may not have selected hybrids that have good disease tolerance, and they have to be cognizant of the insect issues. No-till requires a lot of management, but its management is very attainable. It's not that hard of decisions to make. It's just that you have to do them. It's not as simple. You have to scout your fields and make your decisions and learn from it.
Like Jim said, there are a lot of mistakes that can be made when it comes to no-till. You have to be paying attention to what's going on in the field. Farm fields are like a constant classroom. The field is where we learn what works and what doesn't. And all of this takes time, especially because we can only grow one crop a year. And it can be pretty tough to go out on your own and make major management changes, like your tillage practice, when you don't know what the end result might be.
To jump in it with both feet, it's a very, very slim percentage of farmers that will do that. Wouldn't that be great? But it's not going to happen. So you have to work with them and show them. I really, really would like them to have a consultant help them out because I can help them say, oh yeah, try this cover crop or try this tillage method. But I'm not going to be the person there in the spring and the fall IDing the issues or seeing what's going right and wrong out there. That consultant will do that and then sit down with them in the fall where the farmer said, well, I lost 3 bushel. I'm not doing this anymore. And the consultant and him can put their minds together and say, you know what? Well, what if we tweaked this? What if we, maybe our seeding rate was too high on the cover crops and it smothered out our crop? Or, you know, there's probably little things that you could tweak. And it's great to have either a mentor or a group of farmers or a consultant help you through those processes because it's a lot.
The best way is to have a tool or a planter available and then work with them on a small percentage of their acreage to get them confident in what they're doing before you ask them to switch everything over. It's a very risky business, so you don't want to make mistakes. And so if you're comfortable doing something one way and you're making money, it's hard to switch. But to me, no-till is, it's kind of a no-brainer for us, but we've been doing it a long time.
Farming is so much more than just putting seeds in the ground, harvesting a crop, and bringing it to market. There are a lot of decisions and skills needed for everyday production, and farmers need to master all of them. And tillage is just one thing. So making a small change there can be a risk. and farmers need to have confidence in the decisions that they're making.
You know, I admire farmers. You have to be a welder and a plumber, and you have to know all your fertilizers. And if you put them together, if they burn the plant and the timing on that, you have to know your hybrids and which ones work where. You have to know your equipment. You have to know marketing and on and on. And it's like, I know soils. And it took me a long time just to get to know that. So I really, really admire what they do, but they need help. To do it alone is a big job.
You know, maybe they just need help. They need somebody to help them walk through it. And they don't need somebody telling them to do it. That's part of the problem, is that a lot of the people we have today aren't familiar with growing up on a farm and struggling through situations. And they don't like, farmers are somewhat bullheaded. That's why we stay in business, because we are bullheaded, because we have to be resilient. Look at what farmers are going through this year, for example. Price of corn's dropped from $4 to $3. Somehow we got to all survive. So, I mean, farmers are bullheaded in a good way. I mean, they're persistent. And so it's hard to change people like that sometimes. You got to live through the situation with them and learn with them. You can't just walk into some place and tell them how to do it. You got to be trusted, and that's what it takes. You got to build trust with people.
It's quite a mindset change. But like I said, we have now the NRCS Soil and Water Conservation Districts, ag magazines, all sorts of people are putting this out first now. We have the no-till conferences and strip-till conferences and cover crop conferences. So there's so many places you can get information now and see what applies best to you. Whereas before, I also think in Minnesota, I was about the only person talking about reducing tillage for, 15 years. So only hearing it from me, well, it can get old. So you need to hear it multiple ways and from people who are really putting it on the land and tweaking their equipment. And not until we hear in different ways and hear it from many sources, and even still then, you know, we don't always change.
We can understand changing can be difficult, but anyone can be successful with no-till. It's just taking the time to focus on what's happening on your farm and being patient as you make those adjustments.
It's just paying attention to the common sense details when you're no-tilling. You have to have an open mind and get a farmer and work with that farmer and learn, figure out what works in his system, his or her system. So you just have to be cognizant of what's going on. You have to think about what you're doing and what might be the reaction. I just think if you're willing to take the time and effort to learn how to do it, it's a wonderful thing. But it's not for everybody, because some people aren't willing to take the time and effort to learn.
No-till might not be the most popular system out there, and it even gets some flack for not being as productive. But with some extra time and energy put into your management, you can be just as productive, if not more productive, while doing some good for the environment. But it takes a progressive mindset and someone who's willing to change in order to make it work.
There's a lot of peer pressure, but I just smile. There's a lot of peer pressure of why are you doing that? You know, but I smile because I know my profitability is really good with no-till. I haven't convinced myself yet that cover crops are an answer yet, but I need to try them too.
No-till and conservation tillage practices are wonderful tools for making farming more sustainable. These systems can help sequester carbon, reduce erosion, boost soil health, and better control water on the farm. They are a great stepping stone towards a healthier soil. And like Jody said earlier, agriculture is part of the solution for environmental health and climate change. And tillage is just one step that we can take towards a healthier earth. At the very end there, Jim mentioned something about cover crops, and they can be incredibly beneficial too. So tune into our next podcast coming up about soil health to hear a little bit more about their amazing benefits. Until next time, you guys, be well,
be safe,
and be smart.